former President of Ireland, Mary McAleese. Thank you indeed for joining us this lunchtime.
Pleasure, Christopher. Thank you.
You, I suspect, more than many people will remember John Hume fondly. You were growing up in the time and through the period of the Troubles that he was such an anathema to him that he sought an alternative route. What's your memory today of John Hume?
Well, my memories go back very, very far because I was a young teenager, a very young teenager, when I was first introduced to John Hume in the parish hall in Ardoyne, where I grew up, a parish with 70% unemployment. And he came there to explain to us the power that halfpennies and pennies of the poor had if they were put together. He was, of course, the founder of that very successful credit union movement. And that was my first introduction to him. I went there with my grandmother that night and then for the next few years spent my Saturdays counting those halfpennies and pennies, thanks to John, but also learning from him the power of people who thought themselves powerless. And that was always one of his greatest contributions. He was, without a doubt, the 20th century's great political persuader. He had powers of persuasion that were allied to powers of analysis of political situations, second to none. I think if Northern Ireland had been a half normal society, he could have been an absolutely outstanding prime minister who would have helped to transcend so much of what burdened Northern Ireland, so much of the burden of sectarianism and of oppression and of victimhood. He could have transcended all of that with his skills of leadership had he been given that opportunity as a prime minister. But of course he had to fight. He had to start the fight for basic civil rights and human rights very early on. And in many ways, his whole life became a dedicated and powerful service to the idea of the equality of human beings. And a faith, a belief too, a wonderful belief in the capacity of people to change, because Northern Ireland was completely mired in sectarian thought ways and pathways, and it was embedded, deeply embedded in the political system. Any political system worth its salt would have recognised his genius and given it its head, but instead it recognised in John Hume, or thought it recognised in him an enemy for many years, and that was a terrible waste of time. But he had a capacity for patience and endurance like nobody I have ever encountered. My heart goes out to his wonderful wife, Pat, and children today, who really gifted him to us. No one will ever know what sacrifices they endured all those years to let him be the light that he was to all of us. There's just no argument. We would not have the Good Friday Agreement without John Hume. The fundamental analysis on which it is based, the idea of tackling the three separate sets of relationships and giving them each a place in an agreed settlement was genius. That was his genius. His fingerprints, his imprint, his fingerprints are all over that agreement. So what we enjoy today, we enjoy thanks to him. The sun shines today. Thank God it does after a period of rain. And I think the sun shines on John this day and on Derry this day that gave us this gift. And he was God's gift to all of us. He was a Dan O'Connell, actually, of our generation. And incidentally, the man who completed the vision of Dan O'Connell.
At the time, the 1998 Good Friday Agreement, I suppose the ultimate prize that you've been describing there, the legacy of that. Tell us a little bit about the international legacy of that, because of course there was the Nobel Peace Prize and there were other prizes too, as we heard in Tommy Gorman's piece at the top of the programme. But it almost seemed to project across the world as a blueprint for how to resolve difficulties, problems that seemed intractable within land territories.
You're absolutely right. And when I say that John's imprint is on it, I think that his analysis of how the North's problems could be resolved was pure genius. insisting on looking at it not from one perspective or half a perspective or not looking at it as a win-lose situation, but trying to come at it from the point of view that here we were islands of neighbours, we were always going to be neighbours, Catholic, Protestant, Unionist, Nationalist, London, Dublin, Westminster, we were always going to be neighbours, and we would have to address all those relationships in the round. But importantly, we wouldn't just say on one day that we wanted to be good friends and neighbours, we would create structures which would embed in our thinking and in our acting ways of being good neighbours to one another, so that we would begin to grow differently, that our language, which had always been up to then really the language of rather raw, angry contemptuousness of one another, that we would change that language to a language of common consensus around a shared future, and that there would be structures embedded in place to help us to carry that through the future generations, because nobody knew better than John that on that day, that glorious day in May of 1998, that the work was really just starting. And that was the work of turning the huge big tanker of Northern Irish politics towards a new horizon. And I think of, there's a wonderful poem, Seamus Heaney's poem from the Canton of Expectation. And somewhere in that, there's a line that talks about one who stood his ground. That was John. He stood his ground from the very beginning. He always knew what he wanted for Northern Ireland. He had a faith and belief in all of us on this island that we were capable of creating a much better world than the one we inherited. But we'd have to talk and dialogue, and we'd also have to compromise. Now, compromise, that was a bad word for a lot of people. As you heard there from Gerry Adams, all through the Hume Adams talks, when the word came out, when Gerry Adams and John Hume first produced these documents that talked about the possibility of an alternate strategy, well, they were lambasted, and nobody more lambasted from his own, may I say, than John himself.
And we must.
And that was, he took all that. You know, when I think of the suffering and the stress that that imposed upon him as a human being, those who did that should be deeply ashamed of not trusting this great man who never once in his life ever moved away from the value of peace, reconciliation and trust in our capacity to create a good neighbourhood on these islands.
And we must leave it there. Former President Mary McAleese, thank you for joining us.